Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast. We're recording this on Monday, the 7th of May. Hopefully, you're hearing it not too long afterwards. This Insight 212. And I'm Steve Litchfield for All About Symbian. With me up in Hull, I have
David Gilson. Hello, it's a pleasure to be here.
And the main man himself, down in Sussex, we have Mr. Ray Blandford.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And just a few items to chat about and talk about. We won't keep you much longer than about half an hour, but the Symbian world continues to be interesting, even if it's not perhaps as vibrant as much of the tech media would make out. First thing is that there's been a quality improvement for all the Nokia Bellring devices. That includes the devices which receive Bell as an update, so basically all of the Symbian 3 generation. It fixes some critical bug, we don't know exactly sure which, in Qt 4.7.4. Basically, some people were getting a crash when they brought down the notifications pane in certain applications, and it was rather annoying, and this seems to have fixed it. So if you look in SW update on your device, or whichever the device that is, you should see this quality improvement. It's a tiny little patch, 8 kilobytes, installs in about 4 seconds, and hopefully the crash will be a thing of the past. So I presume you guys both updated your devices, Rafe?
Yes, I updated my device. I haven't actually come across this problem myself, but on the basis it's a good idea to keep the software up to date, I installed it. And as you say, it's probably some relatively low level. I mean, it could be something like a memory bug or, you know, some call just not going right. So it is a very minor update, really, for a specific problem. So don't expect to see kind of big improvements all around necessarily.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they also did a similar patch to fix the flash video bug, whereby if you try and view flash video in a web page or as a standalone video file of more than a certain bit rate, the whole of the flash subsystem crashes and you end up with a blank screen. So it'd be really nice if Nokia, if you're listening, please fix that with just such a simple patch as well. I know it's fixed in the Bell Feature Pack 1 race, but nice to see a standalone patch for other devices. It's really annoying. Let's move on. David, now there's news of a brand new Dropbox client for S6 devices. I gather this is hot off the press and you haven't actually tried it yet, but what are the details?
Right. It's been made by a developer called Tommy Lehto, L-E-H-T-O, and it's called Drops 60. And he claims that it's definitely compatible with S60 First Edition, and it's because he's tested it on his own E90. Although it should be working on Feature Pack 2 and 5th edition, but there are some glitches. And this is a very exciting news for anyone still on older devices, which I'm sure there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, even millions. You've got the basic features of a Dropbox client. You can log in with your username and password, and you can extract the public sharing link for any file, and you can sync multiple files, and it'll sync files in both directions. If it'll detect which is the newer copy of your Dropbox or yours, and it'll offer you a corresponding option. So it's everything you'd want a very basic Dropbox client to do.
Yes, and it's good, great news. Yes, for people with older devices. I know that I did link this morning as we record this to Alvin Wong over at Unleash the Phones, doing 2 weeks with an N86, basically taking an older dual slide T9 device and living for 2 weeks with just that, giving up his modern Symbian devices, giving up his Android devices, just the N86. So well done, Alvin. A very brave experiment, given that a lot of the modern cloud computing and cloud services actually didn't really exist in any kind of mainstream form back in like 2008. When the S60 third edition Feature Pack 2 was being developed, and they were really in their infancy, really, when the N86 came out in 2009. Any thoughts on how Alvin will get on, Rafe? Do you think 2 weeks is doable with an S60 third edition device these days?
Well, I think it's a brave experiment, and there's clearly going to be some things that don't work too well. But you know, the basics in terms of phone and email and web are all doable. I think probably the biggest headache, I kind of find this myself when using something like the E6, and even that's not quite the same because it's not the resolution, it's the physical size. It's just the size of the screen when you're doing certain tasks. Having a bigger screen is a good thing, and there's a good reason that most people have gone to these 3.5-inch and above touchscreen devices, is because screen real estate, you know, what you can see has a big impact on how usable the device is. You know, when you were focusing on phone-first functions, you know, like SMS or calls or any of that, if you like, stuff that was traditional on phones, the smaller screen didn't really matter. But as soon as you started doing web browsing or large amounts of data entry, the bigger screen really helps. And so I think that's what you'll probably miss. However, you know, looking back at those older devices, they are still pretty capable. And, you know, things, in terms of things like Nokia Maps, Opera Web Browser, you can get it for all of those devices. I suspect there may be an issue tracking down some of the software for those devices for certain things. Nokia Store is pretty good. I mean, they still have a good range of software for all of those older S63rd edition devices. But if you're using it for 2 weeks, I don't know how much effort you're going to put into that. I think probably a bigger challenge is moving off a smartphone altogether to, you know, something like a Nokia 103 or any other. Well, there's kind of two class of dumb phones. I guess you could talk about the most recent Series 40 devices, which aren't quite on a par with those S63rd editions, but they're getting pretty close by the time you include things like Nokia Browser and Nokia Maps, and there's email there as well. But then if you go to the older Series 40 devices, yes, that gets more difficult, and even more difficult things like running Series 30 or those other really low-end operating systems. You know, the phones that cost £10 or £15 on prepay pay-as-you-go, that, yes, I think I would find very difficult to do.
Yeah, it should be noticed that if people have got an older device, like an E6 or even an E71, for example, and are struggling to find some of the downloads, should they ever be removed from Nokia.com, then quite a few of the AAS team, for example, I've certainly got my own downloads archive rank with all the old SIS files. So if someone's looking for something for an older device, it's worth dropping us an email. We may well be able to put it up on a download server somewhere. Just to mention, these talking about screen sizes there. I mean, the N86 got a 2.6-inch screen. The E6 that you love and I love, Rafe, is only a 2.46-inch screen, so it's even smaller. And I just wanted to mention that it is still very usable day-to-day. Under extreme circumstances, at the Samsung Galaxy S3 launch in London this week, I just sang this on the phone show chat yesterday, stevelitchfield.com, plug. The E6 was an absolute trooper. I mean, with the BP4L, it saw me through 4 hours of more or less non-stop photos and tweeting and emailing and blogging and videos and just did the whole lot, and even entertained me with music all the way home and entertained me with video all the way into London, and did all of that on one charge. And I don't think there are many other devices in the universe that could cope with that sort of level of performance. And you know what? I had a spare BP4L in my top pocket and I swapped it in about 10 minutes from home when the battery finally ran out. So these smaller screen devices do have that one huge advantage that if it's something with a decent battery, then they will basically last forever compared to the modern Android generation, I think.
Maybe. Yeah, and of course the other thing about the E6, it does have the physical keyboard, so I think some of the limitations that you also associate with the smaller screen devices do disappear, because you can do very fast text entry when you've got a physical keyboard, particularly if you're used to using the device for any length of time. And the E6 also has that higher resolution, 640 by 480. So in terms of information it can pack onto the screen, assuming you've got reasonable eyesight, it's actually pretty decent for reading through an email or any kind of document, or as Steve was suggesting there, watching video. You know, it's a device that I think is underrated for its multimedia prowess, actually.
Yeah. All the way into London, I was watching a documentary on steam trains, funnily enough. Downloaded off the BBC iPlayer. It was a 45-minute documentary, I think, and it just lasted the journey in. Very nice indeed. The having the full QWERTY keyboard is just so great when you're in a stressful situation, I find. And this may just be me, Rafe, but if I'm at, say, a launch event and I think, okay, something's happened, I've got to get this tweet out now, I've got to get this blog post out, this caption out now, I've got to bang in 200 words very quickly. I know that under difficult lighting, people are jostling you perhaps, it's noisy, it's dark, you absolutely want something you can just type semi-blind with full confidence, knowing that what you type is what you're going to get. And with the virtual keyboards on many of these smartphones, it really is, you type what you think you want and it's not quite right and you have to go back and adjust it, and that word's wrong and this word's wrong, the punctuation's wrong. Having a proper physical QWERTY keyboard under stressful circumstances like that, I think, is an absolute must. And that's why I chose the E6 for that particular job. I guess 2 or 3 years ago I'd have chosen the E19. It's very much in the same vein, I think.
Yes, I think people know I'm already a fan of physical keyboards and have been for a long time. You know, as touchscreens have become more and more common, I have got used to them in the last few years and, you know, do use it as a main device now. But I think Steve's right. Under those situations where you're pressured or it's just a bit busy, there's difficult to beat that physical keyboard. I mean, the technology will come on in time, because for me, it's really about the tactility of the feedback. On touchscreen devices, we're starting to get, you know, Vibra responses, but that's always very generic. It's not under a specific key. Now, in time, we will get technology that, you know, will vibrate or appear to vibrate underneath a specific place on the screen where you press it. And there's other technologies. I think it's Hapikitos or something like that, which will bubble up the screen, yeah, so that you get a sort of a feeling of a physical button. I think that's all in the labs, and that's, you know, quite some way away. Until that happens, there are always going to be situations where the physical keyboard is, you know, the better option. But of course, it's a trade-off, you know, it's the big screen versus actually having physical keys. Because you're not using keys all the time, I think for most people, and I probably would include myself in this category, for most use cases, I prefer having the extra screen space. That's more important, having the physical keys. It doesn't mean when I'm sort of just struggling with a on-screen keyboard at times, I think, ooh, it'd be nice to have some physical keys. But yeah, I mean, that's why I think the QWERTY segment isn't going to disappear overnight, although I suspect it probably is going to shrink gradually over time.
Yeah. David, you're a big fan of physical QWERTY as well. Would you agree with us, and if so, why?
To be honest, I'm in two minds, because I want to be on the physical QWERTY side, although I haven't been using a physical QWERTY for quite some time. And what that has taught me is that I think everyone will become fast depending, well, each to their own abilities. Everyone will be fast and proficient on what they have. Even T9 can be really fast if you are used to it. I mean, I borrowed your E6 for a while, and because I hadn't used that form factor for a while, it did feel quite alien to me, and I felt like I was a little bit clumsy on it. I mean, looking at other Symbian touchscreen devices, for example, the NA, the landscape keyboard can be very fast to type on, but the correction's not so good. Although I find the portrait keyboard way too pokey and not responsive enough to use quickly. So yeah, I would opt for the E6 in that case. However, I mean, dare I mention Windows Phone 7, because of the responsivity of those devices, I can type in portrait, I think, just about as quickly on the Lumia 800 as I can, as I used to be able to on my E72.
Which is pretty impressive, really. I mean, certainly the virtual QWERTY corrections software in the Windows Phone 7 is pretty darn impressive. I've rated it as better than the iPhones, which is a real compliment. So whatever else you think of Windows Phone and its lack of, you know, full multitasking, at least you cannot knock its text entry, and I would absolutely agree with you there.
Yeah, one of the interesting things is here, if you measure the speed comparisons, David's quite right. Often the on-screen keyboards will be about the same speed as a physical keyboard. So part of this is kind of psychological, if you like, what you're more comfortable with. And that, you know, that's perfectly fair. You know, some people say, I just prefer typing on this. I find it easier. It's kind of what Steve was talking about there, the ease of doing so. But I would say to some QWERTY holdouts, it is worth trying the on-screen keyboards, because the technology has come on a long way from the early versions. And they are a lot better than they used to be. And there's more to come. You know, we're seeing things like SwiftKey on Android as a way to improve text input, as the way Swipe does. You know, there's various mechanisms. And I was also talking earlier about some of the hardware changes potentially. And there's a lot more to go there, where I don't actually think you'll be able to improve the physical keyboard much more than it is on something like the E6 or the E71. That's kind of the best it will get at that particular size.
Okay, let's move on. When will the Nokia 808 PureView be available, was the title of a flow item. Basically, I wanted to go around some of the different online mobile phone resellers and looking at the prices they're quoting and also deliveries. The cheapest I found, Rafe, was £465, including sales tax in the UK, which is a price that sounds about right, actually, although I suspect some places will try and charge more. And indeed, some of the retailers were charging way over £500 for early adopters, which is basically ripping them off, I have to say. A delivery averaged out around the middle of May. Clever Money says that might be slipped by a week or two, do you think, Rafe?
Yes, I think so. I mean, Nokia's official announcement, I think, was India and Russia as launch countries for this. And I would expect to arrive probably the last week of May. Inevitably, with this, if some things get out a little bit earlier, in the UK, at least, I think we may have to wait a bit longer. And those online retailers tend to be a little bit optimistic sometimes in their pre-order dates, particularly for devices like this that aren't kind of launching necessarily on an operator to a big fanfare, because, you know, obviously they want to get the pre-orders. And that's also reflected in the pricing. they'll charge a bit of a premium because they may not know exactly what they're going to be charged. And they also, you know, benefit from people that are willing to pay a bit of a premium to be one of the first to get the devices. But I would suggest, while I do expect it to arrive in May, at least in some countries, it may not make it in May in the UK. We'll have to wait and see. But if it does arrive in May, I would imagine it will be the last week.
Okay, but of course, even though it's launching in India and Russia, definitely actually on retail this month, we are still getting, hopefully, our review units around the same time. Just because we're in the UK and it's not necessarily being ranged immediately in the UK, we will still get an All About Symbian review unit, won't we?
Yes, we certainly expect so. We'll, of course, keep you updated on that and bring you as much information as possible once we do. We're very much looking forward to reviewing this device, and the expectation is it will be with us before the end of May.
Lovely. Okay. One final discussion point, and this may well extend on for hours, but I put up an editorial this morning, both sites, allaboutsymbian.com, allaboutwindowsphone.com, very much following on from my attending the launch of the Galaxy S3 in London. I know this is an Android phone, but it's interesting because it's being promoted absolutely as a mainstream smartphone. All the operators all across the world are saying, we're going to range it, we're going to sell the Galaxy S3. It's got a 4.8-inch screen, and I handled it, and it was very nice. As an arch geek, I loved all the technology. I loved the large, clear screen. I've got a Galaxy Nexus, and it's very similar to that, but with higher spec internals. But every time I hand the Galaxy Nexus, or indeed this new X3, to any kind of normal phone user, they're going to say, this is just way too large. And I went through in the editorial the different steps in the industry. We had the N95, which seemed huge at the time, but a 2.6-inch screen. Then the Apple iPhone came along, changed everything, and said, no, we're going, the whole world needs to go full touch. We're going to start off with a 3.5-inch screen. And now the 3.5-inch screen looks tiny compared to the Galaxy S3s of today. Let's go around the panel on this one. I mean, David, you read this editorial earlier. I was basically saying that I think Samsung and HTC, with their huge device screen devices now, I think they've overreached themselves. I think they've overestimated where the market's going to go. Do you think I'm right or wrong?
I don't know whether you're right or wrong. However, it has to be a very individual, personal thing. And in an ideal world, each model of phone would be made to measure for the user's hand. Because whereas some people with very big hands, say, would not like the N8 or the Lumia 800, but would love the phones that you're talking about, like Galaxy Nexus, for example.
Yeah.
However, I think for my hands, that the Lumia 800 size is it feels perky in some instances, but it is just the right size for one-handed usage. And I think this is how some of these really big devices are sort of smearing into the tablet world. Because I think the main difference between a tablet and a smartphone has to be one-handed use, or necessarily two-handed use, one hand holding while the other one operates. And I think it's imperative for a phone to be able to use one hand. So that means that your thumb has to be able to cover the whole screen. So whether or not some of these, as I've heard, called phablets, are a smartphone to you or not, I think probably depends on the size of your hand.
Yeah. Rafe, do you think this editorial was just me being controversial, or do you think this editorial was me being right?
Well, I think you're always right, Steve. I agree with David. This is kind of a reflection of phones and tablets coming together. So I think the question you then ask yourself is, you know, what is the majority viewpoint? Because I think there's a case for each of these screen sizes depending on, you know, personal preferences. And I have to say, I personally feel the sweet spot on screen size is probably around the 4-inch mark. That's the point at which it stops being a one-handed device. But even then, you have to be somewhat careful, because are we talking, you know, there's a male-female divide here, I think. So I think 3.5 inches tends to be more suitable for females. But I'm sure there's plenty of females out there who will go, no, I want a bigger screen. And you know, I've been using both the Lumia 900 and the 800, and I would agree with David, the 800 fits better in my hand. I mean, I think the design's a bit more elegant, but as a one-handed device, it's better. And so it's, for me, part of this device continuum that's kind of one of the new things that's come in mobile in the last few years, actually. We've moved from them being just about one-handed devices, you know, with tablets, and then going up to computers. And I expect this trend to continue as tablets become more important, and we've sort of seen the in-between as the 7 inches come in, and the phone is kind of these phablets, as Dave puts them in that. You know, the Galaxy Note being the most obvious example in some ways is between the 7 inches and the phones, and they each suit different people, but I still think the sweet spot is, you know, more towards the phone end. But you can see why people want the bigger screen, because bigger screen, you know, easier to use some of the stuff on screen, arguably, and especially as the, you know, screen resolutions have been upped, suddenly these don't feel as pixelated as they might once have done. So it's, you know, my personal view is towards the, you know, say the 4-inch size, but quite clearly a lot of Galaxy Notes have been sold, and a lot of other high, you know, physical screen size devices have been sold. But talking about your article specifically, I actually think, you know, dividing them by screen size is a sensible way to do this. And it really comes back to the idea that the definition of a smartphone is pretty meaningless now. You know, I was talking to someone the other day who said, oh no, the N95 wasn't a smartphone. And I just sort of held up my hands in horror. And, you know, I then said, but Nokia basically popularized the idea of the smartphone. Oh, they weren't smartphones. Nokia didn't do anything like that. You know, it's all about Apple. And you thought, wow, some kind of revisionist history there. Yeah. But it does make the point about people's perception of the definition of smartphone is moving over time. And, you know, I would almost divide it into, you know, what I'd call it, you know, the new wave is quasi smartphones that we're just having coming, and this will be things like the next generation of Series 40, which, you know, from a traditional standpoint, which I've always kind of viewed as installing third-party applications, is going to be a smartphone. And the Series 40 devices are kind of already there. And then you kind of get the smartphones of, you know, the 3.5-inch, which most people, I think of smartphones today. But then you go up to what was called the super phones, and then you go into the Galaxy Note. So there isn't a clear definition anymore. And I would use the sort of twin indexes of both price and also the size of the screen is probably the most common denominators between these different types of smartphones. So I would be far more comfortable talking about types of smartphone to certain segments of the market. And your editorial kind of accurately reflected, I think, at least some of the divisions that you can see there.
And I think just to go over what we've been saying and just to qualify a few things, I was just looking around my desk and some of the other phones that I've used. For example, the Samsung Nexus S, that's a 4-inch model, I believe, and I can use that very comfortably, but the HTC HD7 is only another 0.3 inches, but it does just feel a tad too large for me, although I'm sort of keen to see if I could use it more. Yes, revisionist history as well. I think people are saying like Apple invented the App Store and everything. Well, people are forgetting about places like Handangover. And I've forgotten what else I was going to say.
And Nokia Download, of course, which they shipped on every single phone throughout the 2006 era. And that was absolutely predating the iPhone App Store race.
Well, I mean, I just want to bring up something that's kind of my pet theory at the moment, which I'm still developing. But this is the idea that, you know, people will buy different devices to suit their different needs. But it used to be, you know, you just had one device, or maybe two devices, you know, a computer and a phone. But there's actually multiple entries along a continuum of devices, which are all essentially computers, starting right from a very basic voice-only phone. Then you can get maybe, as I said, the quasi-smartphone, the smartphone, the super smartphone, then something that's more of a crossover between tablets and smartphones, and then a tablet, then a laptop, and maybe you put a netbook in there as well, then going up to full desktop PCs. And people will own one or more of the devices on that continuum, and their purchase decisions will be very much based on the other things they own. So for example, if you own a smartphone, you're unlikely to buy just a voice phone. You may do, there are reasons for that. And if you own a tablet, I think you're probably more likely to own a 4-inch or below smartphone, because you've kind of got the tablet as an option. And then if you own a laptop, you may be more or less likely to buy a tablet. I think a lot of people are finding that tablets are taking over from their laptop. And people who have a laptop are maybe more reluctant to buy a tablet, or may go for a 7-inch tablet because they want the extra portability. So you can almost pick out and say, right, there are different classes of people who maybe buy two of these devices or three. And, you know, there are, of course, probably many of whom are listening to the podcast go, oh, well, I have one from each category. That's not unusual, but I suspect, you know, you probably use some devices more than others, and it'd be interesting to kind of look at a study of how those fit together and what is used in what circumstance and for what use case. I still feel the dominant, you know, form factor of computing device will be the smartphone, the mobile phone that is usable one-handed. And I suspect part of this, you know, increase in screen size may be taken away as the technology to interact with screens around us becomes better. You know, HTC have got their MediaLink device on the One X, and you basically slide three fingers up the screen and it will then appear on your TV. Now, I think if you extend that and think a bit further, all the screens around you in the home, if you could easily transfer your screen contents onto that, it then becomes quite interesting. And there's potential for, you know, seatback TVs in planes, in cars, etc. So I do wonder whether this, you know, race to bigger and bigger screens is maybe something a bit temporary. I think I'm probably being too hopeful and optimistic there. I'm sure there's going to continue to be these big screen devices. But from my point of view, I would still predict that the 4-inch size is the sweet spot. But of course, the power users, who are going to be the ones buying things like the Galaxy S3, are probably happy to have the trade-off of the extra size, because that extra screen space is more important to them. I won't say normal people, but the majority view is probably going to be, I'm willing to trade off a bit of screen size so it's more comfortable to hold, or more comfortable to put in the pocket or my bag or wherever it's going. But it's quite difficult to predict these trends, because certainly I wouldn't have said that, you know, these massive screen devices would take off in the way that they have done.
I think what you were saying earlier on about different use cases is right as well, because I think in some cases the type of use that you may need a device like this for will offset the size disadvantage. Because, for example, I mean, I think we're very focusing on consumer and personal use, but I mean, there is enterprise use as well. And say if you're responsible for looking after, say, a warehouse or something and checking stock, and you only want to be carrying around one device, I can just imagine someone walking around checking the shelves with a Galaxy Note and stylus in hand, having to only very occasionally take a call. And I think in general, the old ways, it seems amazing to call these the old ways, but of voice and text communication is becoming less important than it is just to be online and have an internet connection. But then again, even apps that you use do need to be single-handed use, so that's not 100% explanation either.
Yeah, and I think we have to be careful not to look at it too much from the power user point of view. I think for most people, the fact that their smartphone or phone can make a voice call or text message probably still the predominant usage. Many of the people listening to this, I'm sure, are like you and me, in that they're data-centric, and actually they probably use email more than they use something like text messaging. But that's, of course, quite generational as well. So we have to be slightly careful when we get into that. But yes, the enterprise use case is a great example. And it's for the same reason that QWERTY form factor, particularly with RIM's BlackBerry device, have survived so long, because that's optimized towards messaging. And you're right, you know, stock taking, the traditional ruggedized PDAs, you know, follow that kind of thing as well. So it's not an interesting either-or thing. You can't sort of put any absolutes on this. But as I say, I'm surprised that the large screen devices have become as prominent as they have done. But I think that's partly the fault of the media sort of talking them up. There are still, of course, a lot of devices selling. You know, the iPhone being the best example. That's still a 3.5-inch device and still incredibly popular.
Yeah. So basically, in answer to both of you guys, to was I right? You both basically agree with me. So we managed to spin that out into 20 minutes with a discussion, I don't know, but it was entertaining nonetheless. Before we go, Rafe, do you want to just plug your other podcast?
Yes, just talking about 361 Degrees, which I do with Ben Smith from Wireless Worker and Ewan McLeod from Mobile Industry Review. We tend to talk about more generic mobile topics and have a bit of a conversation style. You know, it's far less news focused. That's just about to start its third season. We will be featuring some of the episodes on All About Symbian, but you can also go and subscribe to the RSS feed at 361 Degrees with the last ES as a domain name. That's not very memorable, but keep an eye on the site and you'll see all the details of that. And the first episode looks back to MWC, but also talks about some of the recent travails of Nokia and RIM. And there's plenty more episodes to look forward to, with things like cloud computing coming up, as well as other things. So please go and subscribe to that, and if you enjoy it, give me some feedback.
Lovely. Okay, well, we'll say goodbye for now. We'll catch you about a week's time, hopefully, again on the All About Simeon Insight podcast. We haven't really got a definite release schedule in terms of days of the week, because people are coming and going and trips and events. So we try and give you a regular drip feed of analysis and discussion anyway. A goodbye from our good friend, Mr. David Gilson.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time, whenever that is.
And a goodbye from the big boss himself.
Goodbye, everybody, and thanks for listening.
All right. Catch you next time on the All About Symbian Insight.